Welcome again. This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. Going to start a book review of an excellent book. I enjoyed it a lot. I learned a lot. It's one of those kind of, I just kept reading because it's a personal story, a sort of memoir of family and indigenous perspective. It's by Jessica Hernandez, PhD. Fresh Banana Leaves, Healing Indigenous Landscapes Through Indigenous Science. Published by North Atlantic Books. They do a lot of good stuff. 2022. And on the back cover, an indigenous environmental scientist breaks down why Western conservationism isn't working and offers indigenous models informed by case studies, historical overviews, and stories that center the voices of Latin American women and land protectors. She is Zapotec and Maya, I don't know how to pronounce it, C-H-O-R-T-I-. So anytime reviewing a book, obviously it depends on the reader's perspective. So I was familiar with a fair amount of the basic perspective, but if you're not, you would find it quite eye-opening. For example, conservation sounds like a good thing, protecting an area of land. And yet, how much is the native or indigenous peoples included in this process? And as she says, her languages have no word for conservation, yet similar would be healing or protecting or taking care of. And a lot of it comes to the sense of lived experience and the living experience and looking after something. That would be what she equates with conservation. Again, various things that sound good, like permaculture and national parks. Again, she says from the native perspective that those are not as great as they seem. National parks, too. That's a quote, U.S. treasure. But meanwhile, natives many times were moved off of the lands that are now national parks, or do they have access to those parks where American tourists go and, you know, probably leave trash and probably disrupt the wildlife and have no clue how to take care of anything? It's just, you know, like those signs on the highway, a scenic view. You stop and you look and then you go home. So one of the key things to convey in the book is that the indigenous knowledge is place-based, whereas Western is socially acquired through systems, for example, education. So in that sense, the Westerners learn about an area, whereas indigenous have the already live there knowledge. And she said, I have a note, academia and science corrupt indigenous knowledge. So it's like another form of extractivism, getting bits of information and then, you know, misusing it. Agriculture and deforestation started 5,000 to 7,000 years ago. And another phrase, it's like what Westerners call invasive species, she calls displaced relatives, because she goes into describing how the banana is not native to El Salvador. I think she says it comes over from Asia, so it's not native, so technically it's an invasive species. And yet, like her and many other people that are not living where their peoples are, they're not invasive species, she calls them displaced relatives. So they have learned to care for the banana as an example, and included it in their culture. So that's a key metaphor and literalness of the overall book. And an amazing story that her father taking care of banana trees. And the first chapter subtitle is Nature Protects You As Long As You Protect Nature. So there's various reasons, and her father was dealing with the Civil War in El Salvador when he was younger, I think a teenager, and there was a bomb dropped nearby. And he writes, I will say that I survived because nature served as a protective shield for me. I took care of it when no one would. As I mentioned, I would go hide in El Monte when they were looking for me. They knew of every child or adult who was living in my canton because the ones who would join would tell them about the rest of us. Nature only protected me, not only protected me, it saved my life. I remember I was 14 at the time and our guerrilla encampment was bombarded because we were attacked by the military. I thought my life was going to end because I remember I sought refuge under a banana tree. This was one of the banana trees we had in our encampment. For a couple of months it served as our only food source for the entire guerrilla. We survive off bananas, that's G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A. We survive off bananas from those trees and tortillas we would make that we would season with salt. Now I recall during this bombardment of our encampment that a bomb fell on top of the tree I was under. My short life flashed before my eyes, but as the bomb dropped, I saw how the banana trees wrapped its leaves around this bomb and it did not ignite. I was surprised because every bomb that was dropping was going off. I did receive gunshots during this battle. And he, you know, obviously he survived that, but that's part of the amazing story and the message of, in the beginning of the book, as one of the reasons given that from an indigenous perspective, and I agree from a, you know, mystical, holistic perspective, that there's some kind of miracle caring for the guy because he was taking care of nature and nature took care of him, as the chapter says. So he was saved by that miraculous story. And then she also gets into the various banana leaves, the food elements and recipes. And then she has the light is important to project to the skies because that is where our gods, goddesses, and ancestors reside, in the clouds. In my Zapotec community and culture, we believe that our ancestors reside in the clouds alongside the gods and goddesses that created us. That is why we are considered the cloud people. You can always learn something about a people by what their name means. So much of the book has to do with the legacy of colonization and the imbalances and the injustices and still the prevalent bias that she even describes while getting her PhD, and she would be accused of not providing enough references in her papers because Western science goes by how many references you can list, whereas many of her stories and information would be based on, say, from relatives or actual experience in the field, literally in the field. But this is looked down upon in the Western academia. And as well, as she goes through the various ways that, conservation, the national parks, permaculture, how to manage lands, all those kinds of things where the Western science has been dominant and it's still hard to get people to appreciate the indigenous perspective. He also specifically mentions a lot about the African peoples, black peoples, as part of an allyship in, similar, being looked down upon and bigotry and racism and all that, as historically that shows, with obviously the slaves dragged from Africa and the native and, the genocidal activities towards the natives. So she speaks out about the alliance with blacks more than perhaps any native person I've read or heard. It uses the phrase, ecofeminism asks for respect toward our ancestral knowledge and way of life, especially the knowledge indigenous women carry. Indigenous peoples do not place ideologies or concepts in boxes like Western knowledge and systems tend to do. Everything is connected, and this is why indigenous and land rights range from gender rights to language preservation. This is also because for indigenous peoples, everything is impacted or threatened under settler colonialism. Colonization had one major goal, and that was to steal land, extract natural resources, because Europe had limited resources during this time, and eradicate indigenous communities. Colonialism thus introduced genocide, assimilation, and extractive methodologies into the Americas. This continues to exist and be implemented in modern times. Modernization has allowed people who have power and privilege to live a comfortable life, but modernization continues to threaten our way of life as indigenous peoples because new technology is heavily dependent on the extraction or destruction of our natural resources. Within our natural resources, we no longer are living within the realm that carries our creation stories and sacred spirituality. with our sacred sites being desecrated to become national parks, to our forests facing high deforestation to raise cattle for consumption, we are living in a time period when indigenous rights should be lifted and placed in the center of many environmental conversations. So that's a key bit there that she's really very much calling out for the that indigenous ways be included, and not just as a token inclusion, but as she says, lifted and placed in the center of many environmental conversations. And as far as academia, now there are white settler professors who are teaching environmental justice courses or indigenous science courses who should not have such positions, when there are countless indigenous scholars who are qualified based on their lived experiences. However, academia teaches that there is this need to publish in order to gain qualifications. Yet these publishing opportunities are taken from us when settler scholars steal our knowledge or ideas and publish this work themselves. Indigenous scholarship has become co-opted, and as a result, a lot of articles and publications about indigenous people and knowledge are written about them and not by them. That's one of the things I put in my book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, when I was talking about the evolution of the book and knowledge, is that one of the positive signs of today is that books are allowing Native peoples to speak for themselves, whereas, as she says, they've been written about. So this book is an excellent example, and she even refers to the healing process for her while writing about this, because it's very, very traumatic, the family experiences and dealing with all the prejudice. So it was definitely like a healing process for her to write the book, which is always a good thing. The integration and the mix that she says, that the language and the creation stories and all that are part of the landscape. So from what I read, you know, Western science tends to it describes the biodiversity and the technicalities and this and that information may be of some help, but if it's, that information is of some help, but if it's not integrated with the wider perspective, we're just going to continue to stay, you know, on the same narrow-minded track. I'm giving a brief overview and may go into more about this book, but I also want to tie it in because this is the first time I noticed that I don't know if it is a genre or not, but I realized two other books that I have read that have the word science in it. And this is also, though, it's not science from the Western perspective, not science from the trust the science perspective that the media pumps out. But this is, you know, what indigenous, quote, science is a different perspective than you would normally associate with science. The other two books that came to mind are Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teachings of Plants by Robin Wall Kimmerer. That's a New York Times bestseller and a very in-depth book. After I read this book, I was like, I could just study this book for the next 50 years. There's so much in it. Native Science, Natural Laws of Interdependence by Gregory Cahete. And so I see, from my perspective, I see this trend, if you call it a trend, or the evolution of publishing or of Native people publishing, is that it's there is both the Native speaking up for their way of doing things and living, and then there's also this merger where we have the technology and the science that can do good things. It can be helpful, but if it's not integrated and blended, I've heard people say this. This is a time of the various strands working together, so that there is an openness to the, you know, quote, Western technology and science abetting a Native and Indigenous perspective. But that's as Shakespeare said, there's the rub. When, as Hernandez describes in her book, so much of the institutions, the academia, the environmental groups, the politics and all is sort of controlled, or when you get to the bottom line, it's like controlled. There's a kind of a control info war going on, in a sense. That's my word. to who ultimately, you know, controls this, because the system allows for the system of domination would tend to want native input rather than here, you know, take the ball and run with it, because you know more for living here for thousands of years. So that's how I see it, and what the book, what her book, Hernandez's book, prompts is like, is, you know, promoting, prompting how to be more inclusive of the indigenous perspective, because that is what is needed. But the struggle with the institutions seems to be the tug, current tug. So while often there's many signs of progress and many people working together, then again, it's sort of still in a stuck mode. So she, Hernandez goes into her, you know, experiences as a professor and writing the book, and her family experiences and the different cultures she comes from, the Maya and the Zapotec, and even sometimes bias amongst those peoples. It's very convoluted, and that would be part of the competition that Western colonialism has all instilled in people. But she covers a lot. It's written in a very, you know, easy read, flowing style, but there's a lot to it. And again, if you're not familiar with the topic, it's quite an eye opener. And I'll wrap up this brief review with another bit here. Given the anti-racist movement sparked during the 2020 pandemic, we are witnessing major conservation organizations that were founded by the same violent men start to unravel and dissect their racist histories. For example, the Sierra Club is finally facing and admitting that their founder, John Muir, referred to Native Americans as, quote, dirty, end quote, and utilized the colonial mentality to rename the Sierra Nevadas, despite it already having a name given by the something people, Awanichi people, if I pronounce that right. On top of this, he made racist remarks that diminished how indigenous communities also lived and continued to thrive after the genocide and colonialism our ancestors faced. This is why I can say that conservation is an environmental movement that is still rooted in settler colonialism and continues to uplift racism. Until there is more unraveling and reflection of the racist beliefs and actions that founded this field, it will continue to recycle these norms and beliefs that will continue to further harm communities of color. I think an important question to ask ourselves is, why is the face of conservation still white men? From my understanding, indigenous people took care of their environments, landscapes, and nature harmoniously before settlers arrived. The birth of Western conservation is rooted in racism and anti-indigeneity. Thus, this is a call for conservationist environmental scientists to start questioning whose and which histories are celebrated in their environmental organization, nonprofits, and within national parks. So that gives an excellent, you know, overview of what she's going at. Pretty much all the institutional systems, environmental organizations, nonprofits, national parks, again, all these things that sound really good, and they do some good things, but when you get down to it, you gotta look at the fine print and see who's running the show and who's making the decisions and what is actually changing on a deeper level. Otherwise, it's just gonna be, you know, satisfied with, oh, you know, they planted a few trees, but, you know, what about the indigenous roots of the cultures, and what about the roots, the deeper indigenous and thousands of years roots? And okay, one more PS here, one more little bit, because she has a bunch of different words that come in, like kin-centric ecology. Kin-centric, K-I-N, kin-centric ecology describes how indigenous peoples view their natural resources and surroundings as part of their kin, relatives, and communities. So that, again, if you is a part of the indigenous perspective of the super holistic, everything's included, everything is related, and that's part of the big picture that these kind of books are pointing and reminding us, that the Western science compartmentalizes and has different classes on different categories, yet that is not the whole picture. All right, thank you for listening, and be well.